We can't see. See? A little low, but it's okay.
Okay, it's better, right?
Perfect.
Left off yesterday discussing just what exactly shown us is necessary in order for bracha to be acceptable. We said that it doesn't have to be in Hebrew, it could be in Aramaic, it could be in other languages. But it has to have certain criteria to it. So one of them is it has to have a Shem Hashem. Whether that Shem Hashem has to be the Shem of that we say of Yud Kei Vav Kei, or whether it could be other one of the Shemos, that was the question. But it has to have a Shem Hashem. And then there was a Machlokes in the Gemara whether it has to have Malchus as well. Is it enough just to say Baruch Hashem Hamotzi Lech Min Haaretz? Or do you have to say Melech? You have to acknowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the king. So this was a Machlokes on the Rhyme, and it wasn't clear what the final halacha was. So most of the Rishonim do take the view that we paskin, that's how we accept the Shulchan Aruch, that a shame requires shame umalchus. That without saying the word melech, that would not be acceptable. So if we take a look at the 10th of the Marukamos, so Tosfos elaborates upon this halacha. So Tosfos says the second line in the 10th of the Marukamos, that if a person says, Baruch Hashem Elokeinu, and then Hamotzi Lech Min Haaretz, that's not acceptable even b'diavad. If you deleted the word malchus, that's not considered to be a bracha. You would have to repeat the bracha. But then Tosfos goes one step further. The melech levad eino malchus says Tosfos. One person said Baruch Hashem Elokeinu Melech. He mumbles. He fumbles the word ha'olam. So Tosfos says we don't even think that's acceptable. It's melech. Melech of where? Melech of this city, of that town, of this country, Melech Ha'olam. If you describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Melech without identifying what he is the Melech of, that is a deficiency in Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim. That's not an acceptable demonstration of Malchus. So this is already a Kiddush. So Kiddush number one is that Tosfos Paskin is like the opinion that you require Malchus. There are some Rishonim who disagree and say that as long as you said Shem Hashem, that's sufficient. But even though most of the Rishonim agree to Tosfos on the first point, the second point is highly controversial. Is that really true that you must mention Ha'olam? But doesn't say that. But just says Malchus. So is that really true? So one of the Acharonim has a interesting disagreement, point of contention with Tosfos. They say for Eben HaOzer. Eben HaOzer was not Eben HaEzer, but Eben HaOzer was a Peirush on Shulchan Aruch HaChaim. It appears it's printed in the back of the regular Shulchan Aruch. The one of the Gedolei Acharonim, the Eben HaOzer has a tight against Tosfos as follows. We know that there are other areas of Halacha where a person has to speak about Malchus. First and foremost, in Rosh Hashanah, the Mishnah tells us that when you daven Muslim on Rosh Hashanah, one of the middle brachas is Malchus. You have to recite the special brachas, Malchus, Zechores, and Shofars. We're used to only reciting that at Musaf time, because that's the view that we follow. But there was one opinion that maintained that you have to recite it in all the Shemoneh Esrei. That would quite a longer davening on different parts of davening Rosh Hashanah. So we don't pass it like that. We pass it as only Malchus, Zechores, and Shofars at the Tkiyah Shofar, at the time of davening Musaf. But you have to mention Malchus. What does it mean to mention Malchus? So the Gemara explains to us that it's not sufficient just to conclude the bracha with Melech HaKol Aretz, but rather you have to make reference, you have to make mention of different psukim scattered throughout Tanakh that speak about Malchus Shemayim. So the Takanas Chachamim was lechatchila that what you should do is you should quote three psukim from Chumash, three psukim from Til, three psukim from Navi, and then the final Machabat, you should go back to Chumash with the 10th pasuk. That's what we do. But the Eved, you don't really need that. But the Eved, it would be enough with much, much less than that. But lechatchila, that's the tzur that Chazal was misaken to recite the bracha. Interesting that the fact that we recite the psukim that we do, that except is not actually halacha. That's only a minhag. The Gemara is very clear that there was never a takanas chacham to mention very, very specific psukim. You have a choice. Open up your chumash and Google the word melchus, the malchus, and you see anything to do with melech. You can choose that pasuk. Anything to do with Zichronos, anything to do with Shofars, you can use that pasuk. The Gemara gives you a few recommendations. What a nice, appropriate, you got a Yom Pesukim, but Lav Dafka, it doesn't have to be specifically those Pesukim. That's why there are some in Hagam today, some in Schos today, they use actually different Pesukim. So the Pesukim that we're used to, Vayibishur Melech, and Hashem Malach Yoslovesh, the ones that we're already accustomed to be saying for thousands of years, are not absolute halacha. The halacha is you have to say Pesukim Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros. Which ones you pick, that's up to pretty much up to the individual. But it has to be Malchus. It has to be a theme of Malchus. So comes to Evan Ozer and says, if you look at the Pesukim that we use in terms of Malchus, they don't necessarily mention HaKadosh Baruch Hu being the Melech of where? It doesn't say a Melech of old. Be Bishur and Melech, Mishal Yachat Shifte Yisrael. Yil Hashem Amlucha Moshal Magoi. It doesn't say Melech of Olam. It doesn't identify HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Melech of the entire world. So therefore, it says Evan Ozer, just as Malchus is sufficient without acknowledging the truth that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Melech HaOlam, so the same would be true when it comes to the din of a bracha requiring Malchus. That was the chiddush of the Evan Ozer against this Tosus, questioning this sheet of Tosus. The question is that really true? Do we have a right to kind of mix and match that, well, if it constitutes Malchus there, then it's good enough for Malchus here. I mean, it's a different din. They don't go with the same criteria. So how did the Evan Ozer know that we can jump and say, if it's called Malchus in Legabe Rosh Hashanah, it's called Malchus Legabe Making Amot. See? So comes Evan Ozer and says, I'll prove to you from the Tosfos themselves, from the Balei Tosfos themselves, I'm going to show you that I am correct, that we can mix and match the definition of Malchus, and as such, that I have Tosfos in a mind, because according to you, Balei Tosfos of yourselves, who I'm about to show you in a moment, do borrow some of the rules of what constitutes Malchus for Rosh Hashanah and plug it into what constitutes Malchus for Brachos. According to you, you attack a problem. Why do you require Olam? Where did the Evan Ozer see in the Tosfos anything about Rosh Hashanah? Let's go back to the Tosfos itself. So Tosfos continues, and Tosfos addresses different Brachos that we would say recite throughout the day, throughout the year, and not so simple that we have Malchus in there. So says Tosfos at the end of the third line, Ubrachos Rosh Hashanah Esrei. We say a lot of brachas. There's a commitment makir. That's a bad one. We have a lot of brachas in there that don't say the word melech in there. So how does that work? So that's not a problem. Brachas shushman esrei ebehem malchus. The einan boy bepsicho vechastima in shaych malchus. Says Tosfos that when do we require malchus? That's when you have a whole series of bracha. It starts with Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu, and you have to say Melech Olam Hazana Sogwa. You have to start off with a whole series of brachas and brachas. When you have a bracha that's piggybacking on another bracha, you have a series of brachas that's being recited, then there's no mention of Malchus in the subsequent brachas, just as there's no mention of the word Baruch in the subsequent brachas. The Gemara tells us that every bracha has to start with Baruch. How can you have a bracha that doesn't open up with the word Baruch? What do you mean? Look at all the brachas of Shmoneh Esrei, don't begin with Baruch. We say the first one does. And then Ata Gibor, then Ata Kodesh, and then we say Ata Chonin, Hashimei. Where's the Baruch? Where's the word Baruch? So the Baruch explains to us that that's what's called the Bracha Smucha L'Chavrta. When you have a Bracha that is following on the heels of a previous Bracha, so the one Baruch, it's V'chulei. The one Baruch carries over for the rest of the Brachas. So the same way that the one Baruch carries over for the rest of the Brachas, the same Malchus carries over as well. So it also says you can't bring me any, right, can't ask any questions of all the Brachas of Shemoneh Esrei that don't have Malchus, because the same way they don't have the word Baruch. That notion that a Bracha has to start off with Baruch, unless it's Mukha L'Chavrta, that gets very, very tricky, because there are actually a few Brachas that we recite that it's not 100% clear why they don't have the word Baruch in them. So two of the Brachas that come to mind that Tosfos raises are Tfilas HaDerech. Tfilas HaDerech starts with Yehi Ratzon Fanecha. I'm going on a trip. But the bracha Elokai Neshama doesn't open up with the words Baruch Ata Hashem. It starts with the middle of a sentence. So how do we understand that? So Tosfos in different places writes different things. So one place Tosfos writes that the reason why those brachas don't have the rules of brachas and alchas and all the rules that dictate alchas brachas is that they're not alchas brachas. That saying Elokai Neshama is not a bracha. Saying it's a tefillah. It's a bakosha. It's a odah, whatever it is. It's a hechus tefillah. It's not hechus brachas. So a bracha requires a bracha with the word bracha with the shem malchus. Tefillahs are governed by their own rules. So that's a big question. Other Rishonim disagree with Tosfos. Other Rishonim say No, the Elokei Neshama really is Tzibuch L'Chavrta. And Tzvos HaDerech really is Tzibuch L'Chavrta. And you should not make it Tzibuch L'Chavrta. And therefore, when you say Elokei Neshama in the morning, you should say it after Asher Yotzeh. You should say it after some other bracha that makes it close to the previous bracha. When you say Tzvos HaDerech, you should say it after Asher Yotzeh. Say it after eating an apple. So first, do something to make it into a Tzibuch L'Chavrta. So it's not even clear within the rules of Tzibuch L'Chavrta what exactly falls under that category. It's interesting that Tosfos, there are different opinions in the Rishonim whether Tefillas HaDerech is really a bracha because it doesn't seem to have all the rules that govern Uchas brachas, or whether it's not really a bracha, it's really just a Tefillah B'Alma. So I noticed on my app for davening and learning, so when you ever have to go to Tefillas HaDerech, the Tefillas HaDerech falls under the category of brachas, not the category of Tefillos. They're two different parts of the app. So they were machria, like one day enticed against the other day.
Neither of them has malchol. Neither of them has malchol.
Right. That's the malchol.
Right.
Oh, that's Tosk continues. Tosk keeps on going. He says, wait a second, what happened? Oh, Tosk goes on. The Tosk continues. So all the subsequent brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, you're not going to lose too much sleep over because those are all Tzibuchos L'Chavrtas. But he says, well, wait a second. What about the opening bracha? Well, Elokei Avraham, Havi Kemo Malchus. So says Tosfos, no, Elokei Avraham, that's good enough. That's like Malchus. Why is that? So he gives you a drasha. Ka'av Mavina Himlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kol HaOlam, Sheodia Malchusho. Tosfos says, wow, Chiddush. It doesn't have to have the word Melech. It can have the theme of Malchus is good enough. You see, Elokei Avraham, Avraham was the father of monotheism. He's the one who introduced the Kodesh Baruch Hu, was the Melech HaOlam. That's good enough. So then Tosfos chisels away some other brachas. Ume'ein Sheva Demat the Bishabbos. So we recite the bracha of Ein Sheva after Shemoneh Esrei and Ma'ariv on Friday night. So we give a little bit of a recap of the Shemoneh Esrei. But what do we say that for? So that's the Gemara, the second bracha of the Shabbos, and Chazal and Misaki, and that little bit of a recap of the bracha and Ma'ariv to stall for a little bit, because some people would come to shul a little bit late, and then they would be stuck walking home alone. Today you walk home alone, you feel lonely. In the old days, it was dangerous. The shuls were generally outside; they were outside the town limits. So they were dangerous to walk back. That's why Chazal instituted other kinds of things, and the Gaonim added on other things. That's the reason why we say Bracha Shem Liolam is also the store. We see a lot of things to make sure that everybody ends up coming up from shul together. That's why the practice of saying Mogen Avos, the practice of saying that Be'ein Sheva on Friday night has some exceptions to the rule. That's why in most places they don't say it unless it's a real shul. If you just have, a couple of people diving together at a share bracha or bar mitzvah or something, if it's not a real set minyan, so we don't recite that bracha. I remember when the middle of COVID, when we finally moved to started to open up the shuls, but most of the minyanim were davening still outside. So there was a question whether those minyanim should be considered to be a shul, or whether those minyanim were just kind of ad hoc minyanim. So remember in our shul, so we said main sheva and all the minyanim, because all the minyanim were on the shul property. We had an outdoor minyanim in the back of this building, back of that building, back of my house. So they were all considered to be shul minyanim. But other shuls were posing the question where they weren't really shul minyanim. They were just private minyanim here and there. So the question was, how kavua was it going to be? So I think unfortunately we've learned it's become a little bit more kavua, even but like Zebra in some places. So you can judge it just how kavua those minyanim became. But if you just stop going away for Shabbos or something, so then the minhag in most places is that you don't stay main Shabbos. But again, the reason being, it's not really part of the davening. It's not in the temple. What are you repeating? You just not interesting. What are you repeating it for? It was a stall tactic for shuls. It wasn't made for private balabatim or having minyanim in the basements. It was something that was made specifically for the context of a tzibur of a shul. So comes Tosfos and says that takana of saying main sheva. So that bracha also doesn't really have a full fledged malchus in there. So Tosfos continues. So main sheva the master of Shabbos. Hoviyesh bakela kadosh ein kamahu. Tosfos says that it doesn't have to be the perfect replica of the word mel. You don't need the shoresh, the root of mem lamed chof in there in order to constitute malchus. If you have a theme in a bracha that's very, very similar to malchus, that's good enough. And Tosfos says, I care like kadosh ein kamayu. The bracha was unique. There's nobody like him. That's a title. That's considered to be like melech ha'olam. But then Tosfos brings a fascinating riot to this. How did Tosfos know that we could water down the word malchus? I read the Gemara. He says, you have to say melech. What are you telling me a story that? If you tell something that's kind of a little bit similar to the idea of Malchus, that's good enough. So Tosfos says, don't Don't be worried about that. We have a precedent for that in halacha. Hanukma malchus kmo shvay sasher b'kesh emechadav makom malchus. Those is referencing Gemara in the fourth parak of Maseches Rosh Hashanah. Gemara says you have to mention 10 psukim, but you have the word melech in there. So the Gemara goes to a list of different psukim that are acceptable. So as we mentioned, it's not necessary to mention very, very specific psukim. Chazal left it a little bit open which psukim you want to choose. Quotes, one of the psukim that is acceptable to mention as part of Malchus is the phrase Shema Yisrael, the pasuk Shema Yisrael. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Yisrael. Doesn't say melech in there. So how could that work? And the Gemara says, yeah, that's for sure good. How does that work? So the answer is, it's good because of context. Of course that's what it means. If that's the Sestosis, just as the Gemara Rosh Hashanah says that although the halacha requires to mention Malchus in Rosh Hashanah davening Musaf, but you see that the word Melech is not necessary to qualify as the key of Malchus, as long as you get the basic theme, so Tosfos borrows that idea and says the same is true when it comes to the din that a bracha requires a Malchus, lav dafka the word Melech, any theme, any elaboration of the bracha that is clear from context that it's a lashon of Malchus, that is good enough. So this was the point that the Eben Ozer caught the Tosfos in, that Eben Ozer turns around to the Balei Tosfos and says, you just told us that we're going to extrapolate from the rules that govern Rosh Hashanah to the rules that govern brachas. If you're right, then you should look at Rosh Hashanah and notice that there are psukim that don't have an olam in there. The psukim that just say, Hashem is a melech, he's sure a melech, doesn't say he's a melech olam. So they have an olam disagreed with the Tosfos. Again, it's not such an afkamin ladina for us. People are supposed to say melech, say olam. Everybody knows that that's what the text of the brach is. It'll come enough, you're going to be the evid. Sometimes people, you know, mumble the brachas a little bit. Sometimes a person, you go to somebody's house for, you know, for Shabbos, and the main kiddush, Baruch Da'amach, Baruch Pregofen. You didn't hear Shev, didn't hear Lekeh, didn't hear Melech, didn't hear Olam. So which part of the brachas really ma'akid? So if you didn't hear any of the Shemus Hashem, that's a big, big problem. You just heard a Baruch Pregofen, so that would not be accepted. You'd have to recite the bracha over yourself. If you heard Elokeinu and you didn't hear Hashem, that would depend on the Machlokes Mishabur and Ramesh from yesterday. Mishabura claimed that any Shev Hashem that's from the Shev Hashem Hashem Nimchachim, it's a name, it's not a race, like Elokeinu, that would be acceptable. And Ramosh argued it has to be the shame, Mamashir Kevavk, it's got to be that shame of that we recite in the Bracha. That would be a question. If a person left out the word Melech, mumbled the word Melech, so that would depend on these opinions in Rishonim, whether Malchus is Ma'akev, we assume that it is. If a person said Melech but mumbled Ha'olam, so that would depend on this Tosa and the Eben Ozer. The bottom line is, you should say the bracha normally. You should say the bracha clearly. Every word of the bracha should be articulated properly.
If that was really true, then why during our search to make sure that we insert a Melech HaKadosh? It should be taken for granted that it's a Melech.
Right. Well, there we insert it at the Chasimus HaBracha, because technically speaking, those brachas don't require Malchus anymore, because all the subsequent brachas are all Spuch L'Kavritas. They're all piggybacking on the original Melech. So when Chazal were misakin the Losh of the Shemoneh Esrei, so they said that there's no reason to say a Melech HaKadosh the rest of the year. The same way there's no reason to say a Melech HaKadosh Das the rest of the year. So we have the original Melech of Elokeinu, Kevoseinu, Melech Ozer, whatever the original Malchus was, that carries over throughout the davening. But in the Chasimus HaBracha, so Chazal wanted to highlight that the time of Aseres Petruva is different. The Kodesh Baruch Hu manifests himself in a different way. The Kodesh Baruch Hu is the Melech HaOlam, an Erev Pesach also. But the way he appears to us in the time of Din is different. So therefore, they added in another dimension of Malchus above and beyond the regular Malchus. The regular Malchus, that's true all year long. But to highlight the fact that Aseres Petruva Kodesh Baruch Hu looks different, so therefore they instituted a unique aspect of Kavod Malchus Shemayim. Poskim point out that probably the only part of the davening that's absolutely critical on Jonas Esme Tshuva is HaMelech HaKadosh. The person forgot Zuchreinu. You forget about your own Tzrachim Nishkefelech. You forget about the Mesefer Chayim Parnassim. If your Parnassim is not going well, the world's not going to come to an end. You forgot to have Melech HaKadosh. Melech HaKadosh is Makin. That's Chutzul Yavar. You can't have your Esme Tshuva without having a Melech HaKadosh. Okay, so let's move on so we get a little bit of a start into the next year. I'm afraid we're not going to finish the next thing before Pesach. Well, let's we'll get a little bit of a start to it. The next sugya is somewhat of a difficult sugya. We'll try to streamline, try to make it as comprehensible as possible. It's the sugya of kedima bebrachas. A little bit of a complicated sugya. If I have multiple foods on the table and I'm trying to decide which one to recite the bracha on first, So one of the rules that governed the order in terms of brachos, this used to be the joke, they used to say that in Europe, when a prospective father-in-law wanted to see whether the son-in-law knows how to learn, that he would, the boy would come to pick up the girl for a date, so he put down a bowl of fruit. Like, I don't know how true the story is, I don't think in Europe they had too much fruit, but he put down the bowl of fruit, and he had to make a bracha, make a bracha. So if the kid would know that, oh, wait a second, you make eighth first and trips a medium, and then that, and I don't know. If you get it all right, that shows you know how to learn. If you didn't know what was flying, that so that minig doesn't exist in America anymore. They give a nice, maybe put down a bowl of fruit, but nobody's testing anymore. So over here, the Mishnah tells us, what are the rules? What are the rules of any that govern Kedim Vebrachas? So there was a fundamental machlekes at Tanoim in the first of the Maram Kamos. It's the end of the second line. A person has a lot of fruit on the table. Rabbi Yehuda says that you go for one of the fruits that is from the Shiva Sabinim, assuming that you have one of the Shiva Sabinim there. So if you have one of the fruits, you have grapes, olive, dates, figs, whatever, then you recite a bracha on that first. And the Chacham say that you don't do that, but rather you recite a bracha on whatever you want. Now, the Gemara is quick to explain that when the Chacham say whatever you want, that does not mean to say that the Chacham don't learn the sugya. I could have walked away from the Mishnah and said, the Chacham say, leave me alone. I mean, who cares? Which one you make first? That's not what the Chacham means. But the Chacham means the Enshi Yirtza, the one you want to eat. That's what's called an Alach HaChaviv. The one that you prefer, that's the one that you recite the bracha on. Now, we have to define a little bit, what does prefer mean? Prefer means now, tomorrow, next week, all the time. What exactly does the word Shiyirtza mean is not always 100% clear. But there is clearly a machlekes here between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, which one of the two gets kedima. According to Rabbi Yehuda, there is a certain objective criteria that whichever one is a shivas haminim, that comes first. We have no idea what to do if you have two shivas haminim, but we'll find that out as the sugya develops. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, you opt for shivas haminim. According to the Chachamim, you go for chavim, whichever is the more enjoyable one to you, that is the one that receives kedima. But before we go into the intricacies of this machlokes, we have to stop for a moment and ask ourselves, why is this didn't even exist? Why have we learned this sugya? What's the difference? If I have an apple and a grape on the table, why is there even any discussion as to which one I'm going to make? One bar breaks. It's obvious I'm not going to make two bar breaks. If I want to eat both fruits, so one bar per eight is going to pop to both of them. But why does anybody care which one I make? Just close your eyes and whichever one comes in here and then show you. Why is it even a din of Kedima Brachas in the first place? The Tanoim are arguing about the intricacies of what criterion you're using for Kedima. Why is there a din of Kedima altogether? So L'chora, the reason why the din of Kedima is really part of the general idea of Kavanah Mitzvahs, the idea that we try to do mitzvahs in the most mechubad way. We know that there's a halacha that you're not supposed to disgrace mitzvahs. You have to treat mitzvahs with the utmost respect. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, on the pasuk in Parshas Achrimos, the Torah says that when you shecht certain animals, either a wild animal or a bird, that's a mitzvah of kisi hadam. You have to cover over the blood with dirt. So the Torah says, v'shafaches damo b'chito be'afar, that you spill the blood, or you shecht the animals, the blood comes out, and then you cover it b'chito be'afar. The Toshua says that for Shafachis, the Mom Chizobi Afar, it is a hekesh. Just as the Shvichas Adam, as the Shechita is done with your hands, you don't hold the Shechita knife with your foot, you hold it with your hands. Just as Bemesha Shafachu Yechase, just as you do Shechita holding your hand, holding a knife in your hand, you do the Kisa using your hands. One would have thought that it's much easier to do Kisa Adam with your feet. I'm standing there, instead of bending down and getting my hands dirty, I take my hands in the dirt. I give a kick with my shoe, my foot, just kick some of the dirt onto the blood. That would have been a much easier way of doing it. So Kamash will learn the Torah that you're not supposed to do it that way. Why you're not supposed to? What's wrong with doing it with your foot? The blood's going to get covered up anyway. So what's wrong with it? So Gemara explains, Shaloyu mitzvahs bezuyas alav, that this is to make sure that you don't embarrass mitzvahs. You have to treat mitzvahs in a respectful way. So it's very cheapening. It's very low level in. Yeah, this mitzvah, again, you're like, kick him. I'm not going to bother bending down to pick up my hands. That's a very disgraceful way of looking at mitzvahs. So therefore, we derive from here the principle of Shalai mitzvahs b'zuyas alav. The reason why this sugya appears in the second berakh of Shabbos is that's in the sugya of Neiros Chanukah. The Gemara says that from here we derive that when you light Neiros Chanukah, you have to be careful not to disgrace the Neiros Chanukah. If you use the Neiros Chanukah for your private purpose, so a person lit Neiros Chanukah, and then he's, the Gemara says, Otzla Hartzos Mosin, not allowed to count your money by the Neiros Chanukah. They say in a joke, why is the guy counting his money by Neiros Chanukah? He's got the most Chanukah guilt that he just get. Well, that's find out what the Gemara means. So the guy's sitting around by his light of his candles, and he's sitting around and counting his money. the bizoya, the Gemara says that the shloim mitzvah is bizoyas talav. So the Gemara says that whenever you have a chefta shel mitzvah, you have to treat a chefta shel mitzvah in a respectful manner. Not only do you have to avoid treating it in a disrespectful manner, but you have to do everything in your way to make mitzvahs as mechubetik as possible. That's the part of the whole idea of hiddur mitzvah. That's why we do hiddur mitzvah. That's why there's reason why people do mitzvahs. Shloim mitzvahs chavilos chavilos. We don't lump mitzvahs together. We do so many different things throughout our observance of mitzvahs to put mitzvahs up on a pedestal. They shouldn't be derech bizoyim. So the chora, that's part of what's going on here as well. That I'm going to make a bracha. So I have a choice between making a bracha on fruit A or on fruit B. So if you take brachas very lightly, brachas don't mean too much to you. So you think, well, I'm going to have to waste my time learning it. Four pages of my recovery to figure out which is the more important fruit. Who cares the more important? Just make a burpee and call it a day. So if you take mitzvahs very lightly, you don't give it that chashivas, so that's your attitude. But no, that's not right. Shloim mitzvahs means you have to put mitzvahs up on a pedestal and say, I'm going to make this bracha in the most mekovetik way, in the most choshvetik way. So I have two fruit on the table. I can make it on one and make it on the other. Let me spend the time to figure out which is the more important of the two. So if that's our approach to the sugya, so then that's exactly what the Nekudas of Machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda Chacham, is all about. That the Chacham is saying that you have to look for the most choshev of the fruit. Which is the most choshev? Ask the guy, whatever he thinks is most choshev. He loves apples. He doesn't particularly like pomegranates. So for him, subjectively, apples are more important. That gives more chashivas to make a broken apple. Rabbi Yehuda seems to be buying into the idea of the Chachamim that we have to look for the most choshev. But unlike the Chachamim's subjective criteria, Rabbi Yehuda says we're going to look a little bit more objectively. What are objective standards? What labels one fruit more important than another? Answer, Eretz Yisrael. If it has any shaykh, if it's in, that shows a pomegranate is more important than an apple. I like apples, and the kosher eat pomegranates in Rosh Hashanah. I like apples. It doesn't matter what you like. The Torah declares as an objective chashivas to the pomegranates, and therefore it goes first in the hierarchy of brachas. So if you understand the machlekes from the Chum in this manner, they're basically agreeing to the lumdus, and now they're just figuring out, just mapping out how does the lumdus play out in terms of do you follow the individual? Do you follow some kind of a standard that are a little bit more objective kinds of a standard? Hopefully, that's shown in the next year. We'll try to see, is that really what's going on here? Or is there perhaps something deeper that's going on in the sugya? Then try to be able to put into practice what exactly we're going to cover all of that.